Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
I'd always sensed I was different since I was a teenager, at least, if I wasn't sure as a child. And being different in society I lived in only meant one thing. I'd always wanted to help myself from this stark reality that faced me. This same reality that thrilled me as much as it drove me to a certain end. If I knew how to help myself, I would not have sat in front of my computer that rainy evening with a lit cigarette in my hand typing away at the computer.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
A colossal monster tearing through the streets. A city in ruins. Nowhere to hide. Until he finds a way out behind the wheel of the all-electric Toyota CHR. Instant torque, getaway handling, and immeasurable wow factor. John Cho stars in Escape. Experience the thrill. Test drive Toyota's new all-electric family at your local dealer. Toyota, let's go places.
Tried as much as I could to subdue how giddy I felt as months of talking with Amira did not end in disappointment. Trust. It was the most valuable currency for people like Amira and I who were different, who dared to love differently. We could love. It didn't matter. I had never felt love like hers, and I had never committed to something so intense until I had wound up on a dating site on the dark web. Was the only way women like us could love each other in a country that legally prohibited loving differently, like Amira and I loved each other, with punishments as strict as capital punishment. I knew what I felt when her message had come in on that first occasion, and I'd replied. I'd been wary, but then we spoke some more, and I wasn't anymore. I had loved Amira since that night months ago when she had written me a poem. It was the most thoughtful thing anybody had ever done for me. It caused me to open up to her by degrees. Months later, we'd begun to exchange pictures, and Amira was so beautiful she made my heart stop. She'd mentioned I was beautiful, too. Our relationship had since taken beautiful turns, and for what it was worth, our lives even, we had decided to risk our lives to love our physical bodies, even if it were for a moment. Amira agreed to my invitation, and I prepared for her coming. Come on. I muttered after snatching a drag of my cigarette to ease my quivering fingers. I watched the rain shower furiously, knowing my lover was out in the cold and coming to me for the first time, and I wondered to myself if I'd not done something foolish. My phone screen lit up before I could sink into the thought. Then it rang suddenly. Hey! She yelled through the phone, trying to speak over the thrashing rain in vague terms. I think I just arrived at your house with the books you ordered. Can you come take them? All right, I'll be downstairs in a minute, I said, unraveling the code in her words. The perfect disguise to hide that we were lovers just trying to get together. My image reflecting off the mirror flashed past my eyes as I went straight to the door, and I smiled. I looked beautiful, and I was sure she would appreciate the effort to dress up for her. I pulled the door open, and I gasped when I saw Amira for the first time in the flesh. She had no reaction, but simply walked straight towards me with a straight face. Good evening, Sadia, she said, ignoring my call for embrace. She looked over her shoulders into my quiet corridor, and I sensed her eyes stiff with fear. I hadn't seen her so shaken in the pictures, and I immediately was corrupted by her panic. I think I'm being followed by a man. The muscles of my chest contracted, causing me some ache that pierced my core. My ears whirred, and my whole world fell into a dull aspect. A troubling cold shot ran through my body. I saw the strange outline of a stalker marching behind her in the pouring rain. "Quick!" I heaved, wrestling off the fear which sought to cripple me. It was not how I'd planned our first meeting, and the fact that I was disappointed took secondary priority. I had wanted to bask in her fine scent, and her in mine, not the shared sense of alarm that made our teeth grate in our mouths. Amira shivered, and I blamed myself for causing her so much trouble. She was in my house, and I felt so much responsibility for her. "Did anybody know you'd be coming here?" I asked in wonder. "No, I didn't tell anybody. They'd have us killed," Amira reasoned. I tapped my fingers on my thighs as I saw through a ravaging deep pool of thought. All of the fears made me hot, and the harsh sting of the cigarette smoke lining my nostrils made me sick. I stared into Mira's eyes and had a request for her in my head. "I'll be by the door, Mira. This is my home, and I should be able to protect myself. Go into my kitchen. You'd find knives. Protect yourself," I said to her and pointed her in the direction of the kitchen. Amira marched along quickly, and just as she made the bend, a knock came on my door. My heart sank to my stomach. My vision became blurry, and I shut my eyes a few times to clear it up. Then I turned to the door and pulled it open, oblivious of what to expect.
"I know what you are doing,"
a shriveled-looking man drenched in the rain said to me, as though it were a sufficient introduction to justify his presence. "Excuse me, who are you?"
"You lesbians, going against Allah and society,"
he spat, and his fury grew. I had no idea what to make of it, and it made my horrified mind run wild. "Who are you?" I repeated.
"The one who puts an end to your sin," he said,
and he jumped on me with all of his manly strength. With his hands wrapped around my neck, I feared he would crush my windpipe from the force he applied, as I could not breathe. I tapped on his hands, yelling for him to let go of my neck, but he was relentless, even as I slipped into blackness from choking. With all of the force in my female body, I thrashed, but it was in futility as he was stronger. I feared for my life, but I also feared for Amira's. There was no illusion in me that he would find her. I hated the justification he would have for his crime. He would murder two gay women. It brought me pain in those moments that my life began to slip from me. I wheezed for breath, and when I saw the large knife stuck to his throat, I flinched on the floor. His body was rigid, and I knew what had happened to him. I turned to Amira, my lover and my savior, and I was ready for thankfulness. "Thank you, baby," I cried.
"What's up, everybody? It's Bretzky, and America is turning 250. And I can't think of a better way to celebrate that than playing on an American-owned social casino, SpinQuest.com. With all of your favorite games, live craps, bubble craps, live blackjack, there's no better place to play for free and win real cash prizes. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And Amira fell into my hands for that beautiful first real-time embrace. When Jackson got sick, my wife and I had no idea what to do. He'd always been a healthy baby. He never cried, he never got sick, and he had more energy than anyone I'd ever met. By the time he turned 14, though, I started to notice that he wasn't running around as much as before. His grades dropped, he was always out of breath, and his skin was turning pale. Sarah thought everything was okay, and the doctors couldn't find anything wrong, but I knew in my heart that something bad was happening with our boy. After a few years of Jackson getting sicker and sicker, we finally took him to a better hospital outside the city. They knew right away that his kidneys were failing. We'd waited too long to ask for help. I'll never forget the look on Dr. Klein's face when he gave us the bad news. Jackson would need a transplant, or he wouldn't reach his 19th birthday. Sarah and I did all the tests to see if we were matches, but we weren't so lucky. Jackson was adopted, and neither of us could donate. Dr. Klein explained that they'd put him on an organ donor waiting list, but there was no guarantee that a donor would come forward in time. Because he wasn't a minor anymore, his birthday was 2 weeks before Jackson wouldn't be given priority. We might get lucky, but there was also a chance that we might lose our son forever. Sarah was inconsolable. She couldn't stop crying. I had to deliver the news to our son, and I had to keep our household going, keep everything in order, because Sarah wasn't fit to do anything. Jackson was a senior now, but he was too weak to finish off the school year. He started taking online classes. It was honestly the worst week of my life, and I very quickly got desperate. My brother Sam came over to check in on us and drop off some food. While Sarah and Jackson were eating, he pulled me into the other room and said he had a plan. He was always on the internet, and he knew about people that could help us. He was talking about the dark web. At first, I couldn't imagine resorting to something like that, something dangerous and illegal, but he convinced me that it was the only way. The system wasn't working for us, so I had to do something drastic. Sam explained that he could help, but we both decided that no one else could find out. So the next day, while Sarah was with Jackson at the hospital, Sam and I got on his laptop and found an unnamed organization that promised to solve all our problems. In a private chat room, we talked with someone with the username Liverheart. Whoever this Liverheart was, he answered all my questions. And for the first time since Jackson's diagnosis, I felt hopeful. He said that I could bring Jackson to a warehouse outside of town and they'd perform the operation. All I needed to do was send him Jackson's medical records plus a small payment. I asked him how much money he needed, and he said $30,000. It was a lot of money, but I knew I could dip into my personal account. Liverheart gave me directions to transfer everything into crypto and send it to him as soon as possible. I gave him the medical records, and he got back to me that they already had a match. Sam worried that this was too good to be true, even though this was his idea in the first place, but I couldn't say no. After all, we'd waited too long to help Jackson before, and I wouldn't make the same mistake again. I figured out how to convert the money, and with one final moment of hesitation, I transferred the money. Instantly, Liverheart sent a single message. It was the address to the warehouse. Then, all communication stopped. I knew the risks. All my life, I'd never even gotten a speeding ticket, let alone broken a law of this magnitude. I was worried about getting caught, but I told myself it was what I needed to do to keep my boy alive. Mere minutes after I'd sent the payment and gotten the address, my phone buzzed. I thought it was Liverheart, but the call came from Sarah. I considered not answering. Sarah could have sensed from my voice that something was up, but I answered anyway.
"Brad!" she screamed. "He's getting a kidney!"
I gulped. She explained that the hospital had found a perfect match, and they'd be able to do the operation that day. She was talking so fast that I could barely understand her. When I hung up, Sam asked me what was wrong. I said, "Nothing's wrong. Jackson's gonna be fine." The laptop was still open, so I sent one more message to Liverheart. "Thanks, but I'm pulling out of the deal." No reply. I added, "You can keep the money." Still no reply. Sam assured me that there'd be no problems. The anonymous organ dealer had gotten what he wanted, and he'd be able to use the kidney for someone else. Still, I couldn't shake the feeling that I'd done something very wrong, something I couldn't take back. I went straight to the hospital and waited for Jackson to receive his operation. Apparently, a person about his age had gotten into a car accident earlier in the day, and he'd been a perfect match for Jackson. It was a terrible situation for that poor boy, but it would save Jackson's life. Sarah and I waited for hours until the doctors came out to say that the operation had been a success. He'd stay in the hospital for a few days, and then we'd be able to take him home. Sarah opted to stay there with him, but she told me that it would be best if I waited at home. I didn't argue. When I got home that night, I noticed that the front door was unlocked. I never left my door unlocked, but maybe in the excitement of the day I'd overlooked it. I wasn't sure. I walked inside and everything seemed normal. Just in case, I checked the entire house. The whole time, my pulse was racing. I kept thinking about Liverheart. Was he angry that I canceled the deal?
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you expect somebody to ask you to buy something, but this is something different. I'm Julian Barnes, and I'm a reporter for The New York Times. I'm a national security reporter, and that means I'm reporting on military operations. These are fast-paced, quickly moving situations. What exactly is happening on the ground is often shrouded in mystery, but we turn to trusted sources, satellite imagery, and expertise built up over years in order to ferret out the facts that wouldn't otherwise come to light. I'm here to ask you to seek out a news source that does firsthand fact-based reporting. If it's your local paper, great. If it's The Times, thank you. Because where you go for your information matters.
After checking every room in the house, I knew that I was alone. I went to my bedroom and calmed myself down. I sat on the bed. My heart was still throbbing. Then, I heard a rustle coming from under my bed. Slowly, I leaned over and looked under the bed. It was too dark to see anything, but I knew there was a movement. I jumped off the bed and stepped backward. Slowly, a man came out of the darkness. He wore a Guy Fawkes mask.
"No one cancels on me," he said.
His voice was surprisingly high-pitched, almost like a child. Liverheart?
"We needed your son," he said.
"But you got your money," I told him.
"Not enough," he replied.
That's when I knew that he had never planned to help us. He was going to take my son and steal his organs, not help him. I realized that Jackson's medical records had included our home address. He must have come right over when I canceled the deal. "But you can't take him," I said.
"Stupid man," he told me. "We were never going to mess with your sick, defective boy. We wanted you."
As soon as he said that, I heard footsteps behind me. Three more men entered the room, all wearing the same masks. Two held scalpels. One had a syringe of God knows what. They were surrounding me, and I knew I was going to die. I'm not a strong man, and normally I would never be able to fight off four grown men. But all I could think about was Jackson, about how he was going to live, about how I had to be there for him. So I used all my strength, more strength than I knew I had, to push the men aside and race out of the house. I honestly don't remember how I got out of there, but in seconds, I was out of the front door in my car and speeding down the road. I went straight to the police station, ready to admit what I did. They sent officers to my house, but there was no sign that anyone was there. More officers went to the warehouse address, but the place was completely empty. I'm safe for now. But I know that those men are still out there, still waiting to get me alone. I don't know what to do, but at least I know that Jackson's safe. For now.
My name is Matt, and I'm 48 years old. I used to be a plastic surgeon until recently. For some reason, since I was a teenager, I thought that the idea of being able to change people's appearances was both fascinating and artistic. Perhaps I also suffered from some kind of God complex deep inside my forbidden subconscious. But regardless, I always wanted to help people. Most of them just wanted to pursue some idea of vanity. Perhaps what they needed was mental therapy to improve their self-esteem and perception of the world. instead of simply having a nose job just because society tells them that small noses are better than big ones. I now understand that. But back then, I thought I was fixing them. But not all the cases were that superficial. Quite the opposite. I was also involved in reconstructing faces and other parts of the bodies of people who suffered terrible and disfiguring accidents. From car crashes to war injuries, and even victims of gruesome and traumatizing crimes. I once had a patient, a man, whose ex-wife threw a chemical solution which caused burns to his face. With the help of my assistants and nurses, after 1 year of complex surgeries, my team was able to reconstruct his face up to 95%. The man was very pleased and immensely happy with the results, and very thankful. This is one of those significant episodes that will forever make me proud. As for my personal life, I got married when I was in my early 30s. My wife's name was Meredith. The first couple of years were great. Unfortunately, as time went by, Meredith, ironically, started to develop a fixation about how she wanted her face to look. "Please, Matt, I want you to enhance my lips. I just need them a little bit bigger, sexier, just like Angelina Jolie," she said to me once. "Honey, you are perfect as you are. Don't start obsessing over your appearance. Where does that come from?" "I shouldn't talk about my work. It's a negative influence," I answered. "No, it's not your fault, Matt. I want to do it for myself," Meredith insisted. "Absolutely not. I will not do it. Let's not discuss it anymore, please," I replied, almost angry. As weeks went by, this became my reaction to Meredith's complaints and her fantasies about a plastic surgery. I shouldn't have been so defensive, because one day, I got a call from Meredith's brother, Jeff. "Matt, it's Jeff. Something happened to my sister."
"What? Is she all right?" I asked in a panic.
"Not really, no. She's at the hospital. One specific hospital, to be more precise."
"Is she hurt? An accident? Tell me, Jeff!"
"She is alive, and she isn't in danger, but I think you better come and see for yourself." "I'll give you the hospital's address," Jeff said. I went as fast as I could. I knew that hospital. It was actually a clinic which specialized in plastic surgery. I guess you could say they were a part of my competition, but they were far from being the best. I immediately realized what was going on. I met Jeff inside the clinic and he confirmed my deepest fears. "Meredith had a surgery. I know you were against that and you were definitely right, but you know my sister, stubborn. Unfortunately, it didn't go so well. They genuinely ruined her lips. She looks like the Joker, the villain from Batman." "I'm sorry for being so blunt, but it is what it is," Jeff explained. "Oh no. Can I see her?" "I suppose so. She doesn't want to be seen, though. Especially by you, Matt." "I don't care. Take me to her room, Jeff, now." "Okay, follow me." When I entered Meredith's room, she was crying.
"Matt, don't look at me. I'm hideous."
And in fact, she was. But I didn't tell her that, of course. "Don't worry. I will fix this. And we will sue these butchers. I will not rest until their licenses are taken away, and they will pay us for all the damages, including psychological ones. I will get us the best lawyers," I said to Meredith as I hugged her.
"You were right. I'm so sorry, Matt. Forgive me. I don't know what was going on in my head. Too much social media, I guess. That's what happens when people who don't work have too much free time on their hands. My sins are sloth and vanity," Meredith said.
"Well, at least you were over that crazy idea of wanting to change your face." "I'll fix it, with my own hands and my own clinic," I said to Meredith. I did my best, but it was simply not possible to give my wife her original appearance back. She looked better, but not like her previous self. As months went by, Meredith became very depressed. She started drinking, and sometimes she even went out alone without telling me. Went to bars because she didn't want to drink at home. She was embarrassed and was ashamed of herself. One night, I got a call from the police. Meredith had died in a car crash. She was completely drunk. Her face was completely disfigured because of the accident. It's scary how things turn out sometimes. Like everything has a meaning or a message. I was devastated. During the first couple of months, I had terrible nightmares. Meredith would appear in front of me. Her face would be grotesque, like a monster. During one of those dreams, she tried to come close to me and wanted to make love, but even her body was hideous.
"What's the matter, Matt? I'm not good enough for you anymore," she said during that nightmare.
I woke up covered in sweat in the middle of the night.
I can't take this anymore. I'm going insane. I can't fix death. And what happened?
I said to myself. I tried to turn the lights of my bedroom on, but they were not responding. I got up from my bed and soon realized that there was no electricity in the house. But then I saw an eerie light coming from the living room. It was dark yellow. I went in to see what was producing such light. I couldn't believe what I saw. Meredith? Is that you? The light had the shape and facial features of my dead wife, her original features. "Yes, Matt, it's me. I'm at peace now. But I do want to ask you something. I want you to abandon your career as a surgeon and dedicate yourself to conventional medicine. It's the only way you can overcome the trauma of losing me. With time, you'll also feel better about yourself. I have to go now. Goodbye," Meredith's ghost said. And then she simply vanished in the thin air. I can't really say if it was a dream or not. But I did follow that advice. I now work at a clinic where I practice general and conventional medicine.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
The nightmares have stopped, although I will never truly accept what happened to Meredith. But at least, I found some peace in my head by helping common people who just want to be healthy and be cured from their pain.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.